Wednesday, December 4th, 2019. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City right here in Denver, Colorado. And we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, I hope your week is off to a great start. Happy Wednesday to you. We are glad to have you with us today, and I just hope that you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. You ate all the turkey, you had all the stuffing, you had all the pies, you had a short week of work. And yes, now we are kind of back and getting back into a full week again. Maybe even watched those terrible NFL games that were on Thanksgiving Day. Okay, I know the games weren't that great, but I hope that everyone out there listening to the Daily Dose had a safe and happy Thanksgiving weekend. We are now into December. And I'm telling you right now, the silly season is officially here. I hope you're getting ready for it. There's a lot to do. There's a lot of preparations to make. There is a lot of planning to do for the holiday season. Hope you're staying on top of those things. Now, you might not be aware of this one, but along those lines, today, December 4th, is actually National Package Protection Day. Yes, the Wednesday after Thanksgiving is a day to remind us to protect our homes against package theft, which we know becomes more and more prevalent during the holidays. The internet has made it easier to find those good deals and get those packages shipped directly to our homes. But that does have some drawbacks because it has made it easier for thieves to steal your deliveries right off of your doorsteps. Cyber Monday in particular is a big online shopping day where most purchases are shipped to your home. And with the advent of Black Friday, with Cyber Monday, there became a need for a day that kind of raises awareness of, like we said, home package theft and helps homeowners protect themselves against thieves. And just like that, Package Protection Day was born, and that day is today. And hey, maybe you have even ordered some Daily Dose gear from tpublic.com. We want you to be sure to get those packages safely. So today, on National Package Protection Day, be vigilant. Keep an eye out for those porch pirates trying to get away with maybe your neighbor's home deliveries today. Kind of got to do that neighborhood watch thing today. Be on the lookout for those trying to steal your packages being delivered to your home. But, you know, we are a sports show. And while, you know, you should protect yourself from package delivery theft and that kind of thing, but while we are on that subject of protecting packages, can we talk briefly about the athletic supporter and cup that we were all forced to wear as kids when we were playing sports? You know, I remember playing Little League football for the first time. I think I was, 7, maybe 8 years old. And when you went and signed up for football, you know, you paid your money, you filled out your forms, you turned in your physical, you did all that stuff. And then there was a certain day that was equipment day, and you went to the place that you signed up for football. And they kind of took you through all of the equipment, and they fitted you with everything, made sure everything was going to fit just right. They gave you your gear. Well, you paid for it, but they gave you your gear that you were going to wear for the season. So you went through, and you got your helmets. You tried on your helmet. They gave you your mouth guard. You were told to go home and boil that stupid thing that would rip your face apart as you jammed it into your mouth over and over. They got you fitted for shoulder pads that were probably way too big for your body. They got you fitted for your pants and all the pads that went in your pants. And then I remember very specifically that they also gave you your athletic supporter and cup that you were supposed to wear. Now, for one, the athletic supporter for, you know, the male species, it looked like some sort of, I don't know, 5-point restraint safety harness. Like, you didn't know, does my leg go in there? I don't know exactly how this goes. Is this on backwards? What am I doing here? Very, very confusing situation, the whole athletic supporter thing. In fact, I actually remember a kid that ended up being on my team. He tried his on over his pants, and he put his legs through the straps backwards. Then he pulled the waistband up over his shoulder. He was walking around with the world's most painful looking wedgie that I've ever seen in my life. So the whole supporter thing was confusing enough. But then you also had the protective cup. Now, the cup, for those not familiar, was this hard plastic shell that, of course, was way too big for kids that were like 7 or 8 years old, like we all were. The cup, of course, is meant to protect our 8-year-old packages from harm, but the cup was like the size of a construction hard hat. So here we are putting on this equipment and waddling around with these giant cups jammed down in our crotch. I mean, honestly, we might as well have been wearing coffee mugs down there. And it really wasn't much protection, because I remember the first time I actually got hit in my cup. We were learning how to block properly. We were like learning the technique, coming out of a three-point stance and blocking. And the kid I was going against actually slipped and fell into me, and his helmet hit my giant oversized cup. And I remember my young brain's first thought was, I sure am glad I have my bulletproof cup on, because no harm can come to me, right? No. Because then I realized the error of my ways, because that hard plastic cup just smashed into my legs and like my lower stomach. And it was at that moment that I realized I would go ahead and take my chances from that day going forward without wearing that piece of horrible outdated armor. Now, I have heard that the modern day cups are a little more comfortable. They're a little more practical than what I was wearing back in my youth. But today, on National Package Protection Day, let's remember the days when our packages were not so protected. I was in pain and bruised for like a month, and I actually was wearing the cup. I thought that was supposed to protect me. It did no such thing. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us a story about when your package was not protected. We would love to hear from you. Hit us on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go over to Facebook or Twitter and find us over there. Those handles are at dailydosesports. Maybe you've got some feedback for the show. Maybe you have a suggestion for the show. Maybe you just have a question that you'd like to ask us specifically. We will always take the time to get you an answer, and we just might end up using it on the show. Feel free to reach out. We'll always get you an answer. Also, like I said, those holidays are getting closer and closer. Make sure you go over to tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear. It does make for great holiday gifts. We have Daily Dose t-shirts over there, Daily Dose sweatshirts, hoodies, laptop covers, coffee mugs, whatever. If you see something over there that doesn't have the Daily Dose logo on it, let me know. Hit me up on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. I will make sure that we get that taken care of. We will get a Daily Dose logo on any sort of merchandise that you would like. But just go to tpublic.com, search Daily Dose, scroll down until you see our logo and click on that. And there you're going to find all the Daily Dose gear that you need for your holiday shopping. They'll ship it to you in plenty of time for the holidays. They are doing a ton of sales right now, so make sure you stop by tpublic.com. Hey, today on the show, you know, we haven't done it in quite a while. We used to do it quite a bit back when this was a daily show, but today on the show, we're actually going to take a look back at a few things that we have learned from what was a very, very interesting weekend in sports, especially in college and pro football, because with all the rivalry games in college football, and you know, the NFL is getting more and more interesting every single week. Playoff picture is starting to take shape a little bit. Even the NBA had a few things of interest going on over there. There was a lot to learn from this long Thanksgiving weekend in sports. Plus, I do want to take a quick look forward to those college football conference championship games, because they are going to determine the teams that make it to the college football playoff. Going to be talking about that in just a few minutes. And of course, we will have a Daily Dose top five for you. You're not going to want to miss that one. Trust me on that today. But let's start off with what we have learned from a long Thanksgiving weekend in the world of sports. And I think the biggest thing that we learned over this past week, and you can spin this however you want to, but the biggest thing that I learned is that in college football, Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh absolutely cannot beat Ohio State. Harbaugh lost to the Buckeyes for the fifth straight time. He is now 0-5 against Michigan's most hated rival. On Saturday, Ohio State racked up nearly 600 yards. They beat Michigan 56-27. And just when it seemed like Harbaugh might have kind of quieted his critics after that rough start, remember they lost to Wisconsin? Big. Everyone was kind of screaming, maybe Harbaugh should go. Maybe he's not the guy. Maybe he's going to go back to the NFL. And then we saw Michigan and Jim Harbaugh knock out a couple wins. They beat Notre Dame. They beat Michigan State. We're all kind of saying, hey, maybe he's right at the ship. Maybe Michigan is just laying in the weeds and they are going to trip up Ohio State. No, that's not how that went. Now the critics are back on Harbaugh and louder than ever. Ohio State has now beaten Michigan 8 straight times. The last time the Wolverines actually beat Ohio State. Michigan was being led by Denard Robinson, who outdueled Braxton Miller. That was back in 2011. Now, this season, and we talked about this in our college football preview, the table was absolutely set for Michigan to finally beat Ohio State this year. And they still couldn't do it. It was at their place. Ohio State has some new players this year. I don't even know if their quarterback was fully healthy, but they still couldn't do it. And now there are, again, a ton of questions swirling around Jim Harbaugh and Michigan. And I don't know what's going to happen in the offseason. We will see where that all goes. But we learned that whatever happens, Jim Harbaugh can't beat Ohio State. That's just kind of how things are. Speaking of Ohio State, we did also learn this weekend that former Ohio State quarterback Terrell Pryor, he must really idolize Tiger Woods. Like, he must be a huge, huge Tiger Woods fan, because remember back in 2009 when Tiger Woods, of course, got in that fight with his ex-wife, and then she busted his windows out of his car with a golf club because it sounds like maybe Tiger was doing a little creeping, and then he took off in the car, he hit a fire hydrant, then he hit a tree, and then they found him laying on the ground, supposedly all hopped up on painkillers. Well, it seems that former NFL player and former Ohio State Buckeye Terrell Pryor wanted to take his post-Thanksgiving relationship fiasco just one step further, because over the weekend, a woman was charged with attempted homicide in a Pittsburgh stabbing that critically injured Terrell Pryor. Pryor, by the way, is also facing a charge himself, police have said. Now, Terrell Pryor was stabbed in the chest and shoulder. He underwent surgery. He was actually listed in critical condition over the weekend, but the stabbing occurred at Pryor's apartment. Now, I don't know all the details. I have no idea who this woman is. I don't know. But a female stabbing you in your own apartment? Yeah, I think I can go ahead and put those clues together, and I'm not even Scooby-Doo.
Yes, might have gotten away with it too. It wasn't for these blasted kids and their dog.
I have a pretty good idea. If it is that impassioned, if you are feeling that much hatred for a person, you had to have been in a relationship with him. That is the only way that sort of thing happens. Now, Terrell Pryor is currently a free agent from the NFL, and it sounds like probably in his personal life too. Let's stay in college football though, because we actually learned a ton in college football this weekend. And let's go to the Iron Bowl that took place on Saturday, because we learned so much in that Iron Bowl. In that game, the Auburn Tigers came from behind. It was a wild, wild game. They win 48-45 to knock off the Alabama Crimson Tide and probably eliminate Alabama from making the college football playoff for the first time since this college football playoff has started. They've been in every single one of the college football playoffs, but I think Auburn finally put the nail in the coffin on Alabama this season. Now, there was a number of things that I learned watching this game. But one thing I learned was that there was no defense played this year in the Iron Bowl whatsoever. Remember when Alabama versus Auburn was like an old-fashioned SEC defensive battle? Yeah, that wasn't the case on Saturday. Alabama and Auburn combined for 91 points and nearly 900 yards. Folks, this was a shootout. My, how the SEC has changed. But that wasn't all we learned. Because we also learned that as much as we all hate to admit it, and it's going to hurt to admit this just a little bit, I don't know, I kind of think Alabama and head coach Nick Saban might have got screwed a little bit by the officials in this one. First, there was the situation when the officials added a second back on the clock at the end of the first half, despite the fact there really wasn't any visual evidence to do so. Auburn ended up kicking a field goal on that last second. That wasn't all. Then, Alabama was penalized for too many men on the field at the end of the game when Auburn was trying to run out the clock. The penalty gave Auburn an automatic first down. But the problem I had with this one, Auburn had substituted their punter. Well, by rule, Alabama is allowed to make a substitution to match the offense. But the refs threw the flag and the game was over. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't feel bad for Alabama. I really don't. They had plenty of opportunities to win this game. But I will say this, I didn't think the SEC officials did Alabama any favors on Saturday. Finally, we learned in that game, and right after that game, I guess, that Auburn fans apparently have no shame whatsoever, because after the game, Auburn fans stormed the field. Why are you storming the field? Okay, a couple of rules need to be followed on storming the field. But the biggest rule, rule number one, ultimate rule on this whole situation, you don't storm the field when you were just a 3-point underdog to a rival. You expect to win that game, don't you? This wasn't a shocking win. This wasn't an unranked Auburn knocking off a top-ranked Alabama. This was an Alabama that was playing without their starting quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa. They were playing a freshman quarterback. You should probably be in this game. You should have a chance at home to beat Alabama. Why in the world would you storm the field? Plus, it is your rival. You don't need to storm the field. We expect to beat you. That doesn't surprise us. That doesn't shock us. We don't run out on the field and mob the players. We're like, yeah, we won. We beat you guys. That's what we do. Not Auburn fans. They ran out and stormed the field. Here was what was worse, though. Auburn fans actually had to jump over the hedges that surround their field, that kind of separate the stands from the field in order to get to the field. And they destroyed those hedges in the process. I mean, in an era where we have Yale and Harvard protesting how we treat the environment, what are you doing running over your own hedges? Come on, Auburn. It's supposed to be better than that. Act like you expect to win this game. This wasn't Alabama versus Southern Alabama. This is Alabama versus Auburn. This is a rivalry. That was a little bit embarrassing. I was kind of sad for Auburn on Saturday. Don't run the field. You're better than that. But we did learn more in the SEC this weekend. Do you want to stay in the SEC for another minute? We learned that the Georgia Bulldogs, they might be a little bit shorthanded in their SEC title game coming up this weekend against LSU. Because they are going to have a few players out for this game. Wide receiver Lawrence Cager, best wide receiver that Georgia has, he is already out with an ankle injury. He will not be back. But then on Saturday against Georgia Tech, running back DeAndre Swift left with an injured shoulder. Now they are saying he will be fine for Saturday. He will be good to go. He will definitely play. But I'm not sure how much I believe that. And when you're a running back, I'm really not feeling that good about you having a bad shoulder. You're going to get hit on your shoulders. I'll guarantee that. So that concerns me a little bit because DeAndre Swift is a playmaker. I don't want him out. But that wasn't all. Because Bulldogs wide receiver George Pickens also got into a fight in that Georgia Tech game and got himself ejected, which means he won't be allowed to play in the first half versus LSU. Hey, the LSU Tigers are rolling right now. They kicked Texas A&M all over the field on Saturday. Might not be the best time for Georgia to be at less than full strength when they face LSU. Some of that is just injuries. That's tough. The Pickens fiasco, where he gets into a fight against a player from Georgia Tech who's doing nothing this year, that's just stupidity. Georgia has to be smarter than that, and it could end up costing them. We'll see this coming weekend. A couple more things we did learn in college football this weekend, though. And we learned that the Clemson Tigers, yeah, we thought maybe they'd have a test or two before they got to the college football playoff. No, they're not going to get tested one single bit. We saw Clemson come into this season. They were the big heavy favorites. They had won the national title last year. And they were returning quarterback Trevor Lawrence. Hey, they're going to roll. They're going to blow everyone out. It's not even going to be close. Well, then we saw Clemson struggle a little bit earlier. Lawrence didn't quite look like himself. He was forcing the issue. I think he was trying to do a little too much. But lately, Clemson has been playing really, really well. They have gotten rolling as of late. Now, some of that is the fact that their schedule has been really, really soft. But on Saturday, we kind of saw what might have been their last chance at like a competitive game. But that rivalry game against South Carolina turned out to be another snoozer. Clemson steamrolls South Carolina 38-3. But that wasn't the only thing that is going to affect Clemson's soft schedule. Because also on Friday, Virginia beat number 24 Virginia Tech. So that means Clemson will be playing Virginia in the ACC championship game this Saturday. Virginia is ranked like number, 22 or something right now, but they're terrible. They're in no way in the same class as Clemson. So that means Clemson has faced one ranked team all season. They beat number 12 at the time, Texas A&M. That was back in September. Although now, I mean, looking at Texas A&M, we know they're about as deserving of being ranked as like Nebraska. Aww. Now, I think Clemson is capable of winning this whole thing. I really do. They are that talented. But don't you kind of wonder about that lack of competition they faced all year? And now they're going to face Virginia, another pretty bad team, in that conference title game? I don't know. Could the soft schedule end up hurting Clemson when they do face the big dogs in that college football playoff? Gonna find out. But Clemson is skating on a soft schedule as we finish up this season. We did also learn on Monday that Chris Peterson is no longer going to be the head coach at the University of Washington. They say Peterson will step down after the Huskies bowl game and that he will be replaced by defensive coordinator Jimmy Lake. That is what the school did announce on Monday. As a part of this announcement that I don't think anyone saw coming, the school says Peterson, who is 55, is going to be transitioning into a leadership advisory role within the athletic department. They say Peterson is actually healthy. He has no family issues, unlike Urban Meyer, who said he wasn't healthy and he needed to spend more time with his family. But they say that the season really wore on Peterson and that he needs a chance to step away and kind of recharge. Peterson is going to be in an administrative role working with leadership development for both coaches and players. So, of course, when we hear this, what's the first thing we all think? Okay, so where's Chris Peterson going next? Is he going to USC? I mean, are they going to fire Clay Helton? Move Chris Peterson right in? We know he's a West Coast guy. Maybe they're just going to go get him. Maybe he's going to go to Florida State and take over that Seminoles program that is an absolute disaster right now. I know he's not really from that area, but maybe he's going to go down to FSU, spend some time in Tallahassee. Or is Chris Peterson maybe being targeted by an NFL team? It's a team, down in a really big state. Could be looking for a new head coach soon. Kind of keep that in mind. Because, you know, anytime a coach says, hey, I'm leaving, it's not for another job, I just need to recharge and rest and kind of get away from it, doesn't it always seem like it is for another job? I guess we'll wait and see where Chris Peterson actually ends up. One last thing that we did learn in college football. We learned that this college football playoff, it is not locked up yet. Not at all. With Alabama losing, we are now going to have that scramble because number one LSU will play number four Georgia in the SEC championship game. So we know, without question, we will have a top four team lose this coming weekend. They have to. Now we're going to be talking a little bit more about this in a few minutes. We'll take a closer look at those conference championship games. But we did learn this weekend that the final four is still undecided. We have an idea of what could happen, but what will that playoff committee choose? Which teams are they going to go with as the top four teams in the country? There are still a few things that are undecided. They're going to be decided this coming weekend. And like I said, we're going to talk about which way they might be leaning, which teams they might be choosing in just a few minutes. Hey, coming back, we still have a few more things that we learned this weekend. The NFL had a very interesting weekend. We actually saw a huge loser in the NBA, and we're going to take a quick look at those college football conference title games. Plus, we still have a Daily Dose top five to get to today. We've got a lot to still cover today on the Dose. So let's continue with a number of things that we learned over the past few days in the world of sports, and let's move over to the NFL that does seem to be getting more and more interesting every week as we try to just kind of figure out exactly who is who. And I think we took another step this last week of learning exactly that. Because one of the things we learned in the NFL this week is that if the Baltimore Ravens versus the San Francisco 49ers game on Sunday was indeed what we all thought it might be, a Super Bowl preview, we could be in for a very, very good Super Bowl this year. On Sunday, those two teams played a game that went down to the wire with the Ravens squeaking out a 20-17 win on a last second Justin Tucker field goal. Hey, the Ravens are definitely one of the top teams in the AFC. Remember, they already have beaten the New England Patriots 37-20 back in week 9. Meanwhile, over in the NFC, the Niners are tied for the top spot with the New Orleans Saints. So these two teams could end up being the top teams in the NFL. But I will say this, if this does end up being the Super Bowl, if somehow Baltimore goes to the Super Bowl and they face the San Francisco 49ers in that rematch, it will not be anything like this game on Sunday was, because the cold and the rain in Baltimore, it really limited these offenses. I mean, Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson threw for just 105 yards. Niners quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo, he had just 165 yards passing. I mean, it was an entertaining game, but it wasn't exactly indicative of what both of these guys can do. Instead, the two teams just kind of had to grind out yards on the ground. They had to rely on their defense. It was a fun game. It was an interesting game. It was kind of a tough physical matchup, an interesting matchup. It just wasn't as high-powered as it could have been, and that was just because of the weather. The weather wouldn't allow for that much. I wouldn't mind seeing it again. If that's who ends up playing in the Super Bowl, I would be fine with it. I think it would be very, very interesting. I just don't think it will look anything like this game did on Sunday. We learned yesterday that Riverboat Ron Rivera has now officially crapped out in Carolina. The Panthers fired their head coach yesterday, and they are going to be going in a new direction. And by new direction, they hope to mean less silly gambling on silly plays and like goofy two-point conversions and fourth down tries and more actual winning. You know, Rivera has been the Panthers head coach since 2011. He did have a 76-63-1 regular season record. He was 3-4 in the postseason in 9 seasons. Ron Rivera guided the Carolina Panthers to a Super Bowl appearance in 2015, an NFC championship, and 3 NFC South titles. But the Panthers have been just 29-31 since that magical run to that Super Bowl in 2015. And new owner David Tepper, he wants to win. Like, he is a businessman. He doesn't care what Ron has done before. He doesn't care about you being cute and going for it on fourth down or whatever. David Tepper is a businessman first. And Ron Rivera was not making his business profitable. So Riverboat Ron is up the river. A couple other things we learned in the NFL this weekend, though. And we learned that Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, he really, really doesn't want to fire head coach Jason Garrett, even though it does kind of feel like that is where this is all headed, doesn't it? On Thanksgiving Day, so nearly a week ago, the Cowboys were shredded at home by the Buffalo Bills 26-15, and now the Dallas Cowboys sit at 6-6. Don't get me wrong, they are still in full control of the NFC East because that division is so, so bad. But I mean, the Cowboys don't look like they're headed anywhere except for a wild card game blowout. But you know, as we get further into the season, we can start to gauge the competition that teams have faced so far. Because at the beginning of the year, everyone kind of looks at the strength of schedule and we say, okay, who's got the toughest schedule? Okay, they're going to play a tough schedule. They're going to play an easy schedule. But that's based on last year. That's not based on this year. Now that we have 10, 11 games under our belts, we can kind of gauge, okay, what's the competition that this team has faced? Well, I want you to think about this for a second. Let's look briefly at those Cowboys. Here's the teams they have beaten. They have beat the Giants. They have beat Washington, Miami, the Eagles, Washington again, and the Detroit Lions. Let's think about the teams they have lost to. The Saints, the Packers, the Jets, that was horrible, the Vikings, the Patriots, and the Bills. So now, when we look at that schedule, when we looked at it at the beginning of the year, maybe we weren't sure what we were looking at, but now we look at it, and we realize Dallas can't beat a team with a winning record. They only beat the garbage teams. But here is the thing that I look at when everyone's screaming about the Cowboys, and everyone's hot about the Cowboys, and they should fire Jason Garrett, and Jerry Jones is terrible. They are 6-6, and yes, I know they're in the playoffs, but only because they're in that bad division. Everyone is hot about the Dallas Cowboys. But here's the thing I want you to think about. Since the Cowboys won their last Super Bowl, that was Super Bowl 30. That was back in 1995. We have 24 years since they actually won anything, okay? Here's a stat for you. The Dallas Cowboys, as a franchise, average 8.6 wins per year. That is just barely, just tiny bit, over 500. Right now, they're sitting right at 500. They're 6-6. So why in the world is any of this shocking? It's who they are. Nothing's changed. They haven't had this sudden drop off. The Dallas Cowboys, under owner Jerry Jones, are a 500 franchise. Welcome to reality. I know everyone wants to go back and be like, oh no, remember in the 70s when they were the class of the league? That's not how things are anymore. They're a 500 franchise. That is who they are. Fire your head coach if you want to. Go ahead. But here's a question. What coach wants to come work for that ownership? What coach wants to come work for the owner who named himself general manager? I mean, we don't think about that nearly enough. We don't talk about that nearly enough. Jerry Jones decided, of all the people on the planet, that no football and no personnel I know more than anyone else, I'm going to be the GM of my own team. If another owner did that, we would be stunned. Jerry Jones did it, and we're like, yeah, I don't know. Jerry being Jerry, it's just what he does. Nobody even questions it. But if you're the head coach, do you want to come into a franchise where he's going to make all the personnel decisions? Because here's the bad news. When things go bad, it's never, ever, ever going to be his personnel moves. It's going to be you. Now, I'm not defending Jason Garrett. I think he's been terrible. But you're always going to take the blame as the head coach in Dallas because Jerry Jones is making all the moves. You can't win. If you do win, he'll get the credit. If you lose, you'll get all of the blame. He will take none of it. Here's the thing that I really want to see, and I'm praying every single day that this happens. I am praying every day that the ticker runs across the bottom of the screen and it says, breaking news, Jerry Jones has fired head coach Jason Garrett and has named himself head coach. Please, please, please let this happen. And while we're on the subject, I would be okay if it said and named himself starting quarterback too. That would be absolutely fine with me. Hey, we know Jerry Jones is moving all the pieces down in Dallas. Let's put all the onus on Jerry. Jerry, you deserve it. You be the head coach. And like I said, I'd be fine with you being the starting quarterback as well. But Jerry Jones says he will not fire Jason Garrett. Not yet. Maybe eventually. Please, Jerry, do the right thing. Name yourself head coach. We did also learn this weekend that the Pittsburgh Steelers may have got the ultimate revenge against their rival, the Cleveland Browns, on Sunday, because just 2 weeks after losing to the Brownies on that Thursday night game and getting their starting quarterback clubbed over the head with his own helmet, the Steelers laughed last on Sunday. They beat the Browns 20-13, and they put a huge dent in the Browns' playoff hopes in a season that, remember, the Browns were planning on winning the Super Bowl. This isn't exactly how this was supposed to go. They were going to win the Super Bowl. It was just a matter of who they were going to face when they played in that Super Bowl. But the Steelers beat Cleveland on Sunday, and they did it. Big surprise with their defense. They held that high-powered Cleveland offense we keep hearing about to just 279 total yards. And then Pittsburgh did have a decent running game. They had 124 yards on the ground. But now, the Browns are just 5-7. They are behind the Raiders. They are behind the Titans. They are behind the Colts for a playoff spot. Cleveland does have a manageable schedule remaining, aside from the fact that they still have to play Baltimore one more time. But they are going to need some help from other teams to even have a shot at making the playoffs. But here's the thing. When I look at Cleveland, they have problems. They've got issues. Over the weekend, head coach Freddie Kitchens was wearing a shirt that said, "The Steelers started it." Let me see if I have this straight. Biggest game of the year coming up. Game that has playoff implications for your future in Cleveland. Huge game for the Cleveland Browns. That's your focus? The Steelers started it? That's where your brain is? And it's not just Freddie Kitchens, although that obviously is where it starts. Remember, wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. was more worried about the silly watch he wanted to wear during games rather than his play, rather than not producing on the field, rather than losing games on the field. I'm more worried about my watch. Quarterback Baker Mayfield spent the offseason making all those commercials we keep seeing. Defensive end Myles Garrett was suspended indefinitely for assault with a deadly weapon. Cleveland is a perfect example of an immature team with an immature coach. They're very, very talented, and they have no idea how to actually go about preparing to win the game. You know, everybody talks about, oh, they just wanted to win more. No. Did you want to prepare to win more? Because that's where you win the games. Cleveland, they don't get it. And I don't think they're going to get it. And I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. We did also learn this week that we will not have a team in the NFL go Ophirs this season. Because yes, those terrible, lowly Cincinnati Bengals, who entered their game on Sunday against the New York Jets with an 0-11 record. They were the only team left in the league who hadn't won a game yet this season. They go out, they manhandle the Jets, they pick up their first win of the year. Now every single team in the NFL has at least one win. Hey, it's been a rough start for first-year head coach Zach Taylor. The Bengals have been terrible. They don't have a ton of talent. They've had a ton of injuries. But on Sunday, Andy Dalton got back in his starting role at quarterback. And no, he wasn't great. But I'll give him this. He at least didn't turn it over. He did throw a touchdown, and the Bengals picked up a win. Hey, I was genuinely concerned that Cincinnati might not win a game all year. They had this chance. They had the Jets. They do still have the Browns twice. I don't think they can beat Cleveland. They still have the Patriots. That's a loss. And then they will play the Miami Dolphins in what I guess everyone's going to call the toilet bowl. But I was glad to see the Cincinnati Bengals get a win. And you know what? I was happy for Andy Dalton. Because Andy Dalton is not very good. But he's going to get paid a lot of money by someone this offseason. And this win on Sunday will probably help him. Just please, please, please don't let it be in Denver. Speaking of Denver, we learned that the Drew Lock era has started in the city of Denver. And no, it wasn't pretty. And at times, I had to force myself to not change the channel because I kept wanting to turn it to Red Zone because this game was so terrible. But rookie quarterback Drew Lock got the start on Sunday for the Denver Broncos, and he actually picked up a win over the Los Angeles Chargers, who, by the way, might be the most disappointing team in the NFL this year. Honestly, at this point, shouldn't the Chargers be like relegated to the Canadian Football League or something? But for the record, Drew Lock went 18 of 28 for just 134 yards, but he did throw two touchdowns, and he did lead a game-winning drive late. The Broncos beat the Chargers 23-20. I'm not sure this win was actually a good thing for the Denver Broncos. They actually drop from the number 5 draft pick with that win all the way down to the number 11 pick. But here is the thing that stood out to me. While we saw the Drew Lock era beginning in Denver, and I don't know if that's a good thing, there are some concerns I have about Drew Lock, but we'll talk about those at another time. The thing that also stood out to me about this Chargers versus Broncos debacle that I had to watch on Sunday was that the Philip Rivers era in the NFL, it might be ending. And I mean like now, like soon, like really, really soon. On Sunday, Philip Rivers throws for 265 yards. He did have two touchdowns. He did also have an interception, but wow, Philip does not look good. The Chargers went 5 of 15 on third downs. They scored just 20 points on the Broncos, who, by the way, didn't have Von Miller in the lineup. So you can't say, well, yeah, but he was under constant duress from Von Miller. No, he wasn't. Von wasn't even in uniform. He was sitting on the sidelines. I'm not saying that I think Philip Rivers should retire. That's his decision. That's up to him. And the Chargers, by the way, would be wise not to push him toward retirement. Because, I mean, things could get worse. We always think, well, what if they got a lot better? What if they got a lot worse? We have seen some lean, lean times for that Chargers franchise. So don't push him out the door. I'm just saying this. When I look at Philip play right now, he doesn't always look like he can even compete. He doesn't have any arm strength left. He can't make the throws down the field that he used to make. And his decision making, like, it's slipping faster than his birth control methods. Enjoy Philip Rivers while you can, because just watching him play on Sunday against the Broncos, against, by the way, a bad Broncos team, he looks like he might not be around all that much longer. Philip Rivers is struggling. Finally, we did learn that the New England Patriots are once again going into that late November, kind of early December swoon that we see every year right about this time. And then, of course, what do the Patriots do? They right the ship and they go to yet another Super Bowl. But why is it that this one seems a little more precarious than the past? I mean, the Houston Texans, a team I have no faith in to do anything important, they absolutely took it to the Patriots on Sunday night. They beat them 28-22. That game wasn't that close because the Patriots scored two late touchdowns to make it look a little closer than it was. Now, we've talked about Tom Brady on the dose here, looking like age might finally be catching up with him. But it's not just Tom Brady at all. His surrounding cast on offense is really, really struggling. The offensive line, they're changing that lineup every single week. They cannot run the football consistently, and the wide receivers are really inconsistent. You can tell Brady doesn't trust those wide receivers with the exception of Julian Edelman. Why do I get the feeling that if the New England Patriots could bring back Antonio Brown without fear of repercussions, they would do it in an absolute second? Now, because of their history, we have to think the Patriots are going to figure this out. They're going to get better. They're going to win playoff games. But I don't know. It doesn't look so good right now. I wouldn't say Patriot fans should start panicking, but you should be a little bit concerned. Let's switch over to the NBA. And I know that in the NBA, the season, it's so early and it's such a long season. You can't really judge much of what's going on in the NBA until, I don't know, maybe we get past the holidays, kind of get into January, and we can kind of see teams shape up and who's really a player and who's not. But we did learn something over the weekend. Actually, I learned a few things over the weekend. For one, we did finally learn that there is one person in the NBA right now that can stop Houston Rockets guard James Harden. And I mean shut him down completely. Can't score. Can't do anything. No, it's not Draymond Green. It's not Patrick Beverley. It's not Marcus Smart. It is Houston head coach Mike D'Antoni. Because on Saturday, against the Atlanta Hawks, James Harden had scored 60 points, and the Rockets were up 127 to 73 going into the fourth quarter. So what did Mike D'Antoni do? He pulled James Harden. Get him some rest. Save his legs. Keep him healthy. Keep him fresh. Harden didn't play a minute in the fourth quarter. Now, just something to keep in mind. James Harden's career high in a game is 61 points. He could have easily broken that. He could have broken that with just one more shot. But at the rate he was going, I mean, think about this. He had only played 31 minutes the entire game. Who knows how many points James Harden might have scored on Saturday. Once Harden realized he wasn't going back in, he was like, oh man, I didn't realize I was that close. I already had 60. My high is 61. I would have gone back in and tried to beat my record. But you know what else I learned? Not just that Mike D'Antoni might be the only guy in the NBA that can stop James Harden completely, but I also learned there is another guy out there who is more upset about this whole situation than James Harden. Because you just know that former NBA player Jalen Rose had to be furious about James Harden getting pulled for the entire fourth quarter. Remember this. Remember that Jalen Rose was playing for the Toronto Raptors back in 2006 when Kobe Bryant dropped 82 points on them. Now, were all those points on Jalen Rose? No, but a lot of them were. I'm not saying all of them, but I'm saying a bunch of them were. And you know, when Jalen was watching this Rockets game, Jalen was like, hey, let Harden go. Let's just see what happens. Maybe he'll score 83. Sorry, Jalen Rose. It was not meant to be. You're going to have to wait a little bit longer. But when I watch James Harden, I do think he is absolutely capable of breaking a record on any given night because dude can just absolutely score. But I do want to say one thing. Just a quick, by the way, just a quick side note on James Harden. And I do. I hate to bring this up. Pardon me in advance for bringing this up. I swear I hate to bring this up. But I am hearing some of the talking hairdos on the big network channels talking about how James Harden is a better scorer than Michael Jordan. I'll tell you what, just as a pure scorer, I'm not comparing them as players, but just in terms of scoring, James Harden is every bit as good as Michael Jordan. You can believe that. Yeah, I've heard that from numerous sources, and I'm sure you have too. Here's the problem. It's tough to compare eras. You can tell me in this era that James Harden is comparable to Michael Jordan in his era, but please stop there. Because you can't compare the two players. Because if you put Jordan in this era, when you can't touch him or he's going to the free throw line, hey, make no mistake, MJ is averaging 45, maybe 50 a game. But let's flip that. Let's put James Harden back in Jordan's era because I would be very, very interested to see Harden score like he does without the ticky-tack fouls. And you know what? Let's go one step further than that. I would be even more interested to see James Harden score like he does now after he drives into the paint against, I don't know, say Detroit, and they punch him in the mouth and knock him on the floor and stand over him, and there's no flagrant foul. There's no extra free throws. Get up and make your free throws. Too bad. That's just how we play here. Hey, it's a different era. Please, please, please stop comparing. It is not the same. Both players, great in their eras. Don't try to compare the two. It's completely unfair. James Harden's a great scorer. Can't compare him to Mike. Okay, coming back, the college football season is coming to an end. And this weekend, we have some huge games as the conference championships will be taking place. But you know, there are a couple of these games that are going to have serious playoff implications. We'll take a look at them when we get back. Plus, we saw some history take place in college football this past weekend. Our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to take a look at a few other similar historical events when we get back. So the college football playoff is looming. And this coming weekend, we are going to get those conference championship games that are going to finalize who makes that Final Four playoff. Well, sort of. Because then we are going to be waiting for whatever that playoff committee is going to decide. But right now, let's take a quick look at those title games and what we could see transpire this weekend, because there are some interesting scenarios that could take place. Let's start on Friday night. Don't sleep on Friday night, because Friday night we have the Pac-12 championship game featuring the number 5 Utah Utes against the number 13 Oregon Ducks. And this game could be huge, because a Utah win could actually propel them into the playoff. Now, I think it's going to be tough, because here's the problem, and I realize this is not fair, but Utah is just not a big name program, and they can pretend all they want to. We know the college football playoff committee does look at what kind of name you have. We've seen it before. They will take an Ohio State over a Baylor or a TCU. They've done it in the past. So Utah, a win here helps their chances, but does it make them automatically get in? No, it doesn't. Now I look at Utah, they're a physically tough team, and they could be a problem if they got into the playoff. I don't know if they can hang with the big boys, but they're not going to back down from anyone. Now looking at this game itself, the two teams have not played each other yet this year. Utah's lone loss was to USC. We know USC is a bit flaky, but they do have talent. Meanwhile, Oregon has lost twice, once to Auburn, and then they did have that bad loss to Arizona State that kind of ended any chance they had of getting into the playoff. Now, Oregon has no chance of getting into the playoff, make no mistake, but they could be a spoiler in this game. If they beat Utah, the Pac-12 is out. They have no chance whatsoever. Moving on to Saturday, and on Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, we will have the Big 12 championship, when the number 6 Oklahoma Sooners will be facing the number 8 Baylor Bears. Now remember, these two teams just played each other like 3 weeks ago, with the Sooners stopping a 2-point conversion and holding on to beat Baylor. And remember, that game was played at Baylor. If Oklahoma could win this game and then get a little help of their own, yeah, the Oklahoma Sooners could play their way into the playoff very, very easily. Remember, Oklahoma's lone loss was to Kansas State, but that was clear back in October. Granted, they did give up like 50 points to Kansas State, but who's counting? Now, I don't think Baylor has any chance whatsoever, even if they beat Oklahoma by like 3 touchdowns, because the playoff committee is going to hold it against Baylor that their schedule was so, so soft. Keep this in mind. Baylor played exactly 1 ranked team all year, and they lost to them at home. That Oklahoma game, the only team they faced that was even ranked. I think Oklahoma is the Big 12's only hope. They've got to beat Baylor, and then they do need a little bit of help in front of them. Not a lot of help, just a little bit of help. Moving on to Saturday afternoon, we will have the Southeastern Conference Championship. It's going to get rolling with the number 4 Georgia Bulldogs playing the number 1 or number 2 LSU Tigers, depending on, you know, which thing you subscribe to. LSU has beaten 4 top 10 teams this season, and they've done it pretty impressively. They will get a chance to add to their resume here. For a change this year, it is the LSU offense, not the defense, that is carrying this team. Quarterback Joe Burrow can win the Heisman if he has a good showing here. It will be wrapped up. It will be done. Everyone can talk about Chase Young at Ohio State all they want to. You can talk about whoever you want to. If Joe Burrow wins this game, Joe Burrow wins the Heisman. It is cut and dried. The Heisman committee gives that award to quarterbacks. We already know that. But I don't expect Georgia to go quietly. Quarterback Jake Fromm is experienced, and even though he's gonna need to get some help from backups at like the running back and wide receiver position, don't forget this. That Georgia offensive line is a load. They are huge. They will give Fromm a ton of time. They will open up running lanes. Georgia could be a pain on Saturday. Now, if LSU wins this game, obviously they're in. If LSU loses a close one, I still think they might get in. If Georgia wins, they're in. If Georgia loses a close one, I think they still have a chance to get in. Now, if Georgia loses by, say, a touchdown or more, then the committee may look down the list at those number five, number six teams. Then they start looking at an Oklahoma maybe, or a Utah maybe. But I think Georgia and LSU legitimately both have a chance to get into the playoff. Moving on to Saturday evening, we have the Atlantic Coast Conference Championship, where number three Clemson will beat up on now, I guess, in the top 25, number 22 Virginia. Now, looking at this game, this should be like a 56-3 kind of game. Who are we kidding? Virginia has losses already to Notre Dame. They lost to Miami and they lost to Louisville. This should be a game where the bus driver is the MVP. As long as the bus driver gets Clemson to the stadium, they'll be fine and they'll skate right into the college football playoff. But what if Virginia kept this close? You know, we talked earlier about the soft schedule that Clemson has played this year. Clemson cannot afford to slip up here. Win a close game, you're kind of taking your chances that they wouldn't bump a team that has been more tested ahead of you. I don't think that will happen. I think Clemson will dominate. Pretty sure they'll dominate. They better dominate. Because if not, Clemson is taking their livelihood in their own hands. Finally, we have the Big Ten Championship on Saturday night that will be between either, again, number one or number two Ohio State and number 12 Wisconsin. If Ohio State wins, they're in. That's easy. But could Ohio State get in if they were to have a close loss? I wouldn't think so. And I don't expect it to come into play because I expect the Buckeyes to curb stomp the Badgers just like they did earlier this year when they beat Wisconsin 38-7. And honestly, watching that game, it wasn't that close. So I think Ohio State is going to get in. At the end of the day, on Saturday, if all the favorites roll, I believe that the final four will be set and it will be as follows. Here's my prediction. You can tell me I'm wrong later. Number one, I think will be LSU because if they beat Georgia, that's another top five team they beat. Number two will be Ohio State. Number three will be Clemson. And number four, I am saying, is going to be those Oklahoma Sooners. Then Utah would be five, and I don't know, maybe they'll put Georgia at six or something. If it does go that way, then I'm not sure anyone would have any room to complain. Because all those teams that get knocked out, hey, they had their chances. They could have won. They could have gotten their way in. Where things could get interesting on Saturday would be if there was an upset. What if LSU goes down? Or what if it's just a really, really close game? Then I think you could see maybe Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, and LSU get in. Now, if we get a blowout upset on Saturday, then we have a legitimate chance to see some chaos. I'm just not sure how likely that is. I think all of the favorites will probably roll. But remember, we are talking about 18, 19, 20-year-old kids here. You never know. They might just have a bad day and not show up and things get funky all of a sudden. One last thing that I do need to mention here, and I can't wait for those conference championship games. They're going to be a lot of fun. I know they're going to be on Saturday. We're going to be glued to them, understandable. But on Saturday, do not forget this. Take some time, flip the channel, go over to that Army-Navy game on CBS. It is at 1 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Again, if you just want something to feel good about, if you want to feel positive about the youth of America, watch a minute or two of the Army-Navy game and see some of the bright young kids that are most likely playing their final football game. But just watch the passion, watch the discipline that they play with. Now, in the game itself, Navy should beat Army after Army has won this game the last three times out. But this game is always competitive. It is always well played. These kids play their guts out. Football is the absolutely easiest part of their day. But if you turn on Army Navy and you see who sings second this year, you will be glad that you did. These kids are phenomenal. You gotta make sure you watch a little bit of Army and Navy this weekend. Now, as we do every single week, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Now, I told you, back at the beginning of the show, that some history was made in college football this past weekend. Jim Harbaugh became the first Michigan coach in history to not beat Ohio State in his first five tries. In the 115 years of this heated rivalry, no coach has lost his first five tries against their rival. But on Saturday, Harbaugh managed to do exactly that. Now, I want you to think back. When Jim Harbaugh was hired to go to Michigan back in 2015, everyone was convinced that he would return the maize and blue to prominence. And on some level, to be fair, he has. Michigan has been ranked in the top 15 in all of his seasons back in Ann Arbor. And yet, he hasn't done the one thing that Michigan fans want the most. Beat the Buckeyes. Which is a little surprising when you think about that. I mean, in the entire history of that rivalry, no coach has lost his first five tries out? That's crazy. How is Jim Harbaugh making that kind of history? So it is kind of surprising, at least on the surface. But here at the Daily Dose, we don't just rely on surface information. We dig a little deeper. We find the things that they say cannot be found. The Daily Dose investigative team excels in this area, and they have struck again. Because what you might not realize is that this isn't the first time that Jim Harbaugh has failed to accomplish something that we all thought he could easily accomplish. This isn't the first time he's done something no one expected. This isn't the first time Jim Harbaugh has gone against the norm of what everyone else thought would happen. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 counts down five other Jim Harbaugh firsts. You might not know about them. They might be a little bit well hidden, but here at the Daily Dose, we found them. And when you hear them, they do explain some things about Mr. Jim Harbaugh. Let's get started with number five. You might not realize this, but Jim Harbaugh actually played a few seasons in the NBA. In fact, he was a teammate of LeBron James. And shockingly, Jim Harbaugh was told by LeBron James that he was actually a good teammate. Hey, that's a first. I don't care who you are. Anthony Davis, enjoy it now, because eventually he's going to throw you under the bus. He's throwing everybody else under the bus. LeBron never plays with good teammates. He hates his teammates. I saw him on Sunday, not even giving dap to some of his teammates. LeBron is always a victim of his terrible teammates, but somehow Jim Harbaugh played with LeBron, and LeBron had mad respect for him. He was like, oh man, Jim Harbaugh? That's a guy I trust. Give him the ball late in games. I have no worries. LeBron James actually liked playing with Jim Harbaugh. That's definitely a first. Let's move on to number four. Again, going back to those days in the NBA, but Jim Harbaugh did something that I didn't think was possible. Jim Harbaugh used James Harden's step back move, and he actually got called for a traveling violation. What? That never happens. Are you kidding me? That never happens. Happened to Jim Harbaugh. And when you look at that, doesn't it kind of explain a little bit of Jim Harbaugh being the guy he has? Of course, he lost his first five times out to Ohio State. He also got called for traveling in the NBA. On a move, by the way, Harden does every single night, never gets called for a travel. Harbaugh did. Sometimes it's tougher than you think being Jim Harbaugh. Moving on to number three of Jim Harbaugh first, and things you just might not realize about the head coach up at Michigan, but our number three entry, Jim Harbaugh actually made it all the way through Donald Trump's inauguration speech without once rolling his eyes.
What?
Hey, I don't know how he did it. It's not all bad. Jim Harbaugh has done some things that you're like, no, that's impressive. I'll give anybody credit. That's an impressive thing. Jim Harbaugh has done some impressive things in his life. Moving on to number two of Jim Harbaugh first. You might not realize this, but Jim Harbaugh once dated a Kardashian. But here's where it gets weird. After the date, Jim Harbaugh went home alone.
Oh, no, you didn't.
That never happens. That never happens. Jim Harbaugh, again, has done some things that we never, ever would imagine could even happen. So what is the number one thing that Jim Harbaugh did that we can't even believe? We are counting down Jim Harbaugh first today on the Daily Dose. And our number one thing that he has done that was shocking, that was surprising, we couldn't even believe it at the time, and we especially can't believe it now. Jim Harbaugh actually had Colin Kaepernick playing pretty good football. Hey, next week on The Dose, We will, of course, be recapping all things in the world of sports. The college football playoff will be set. We'll have to take a look at that. The Heisman Award is coming up. Talk about that a little bit. Plus, we have the NFL. And next week on The Dose, I'm telling you right now, we have something very, very special for you. You have to make sure that you tune in for that. Have to thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. But more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show with a friend, a family member, a coworker. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great week, everybody. I will see you all next Wednesday.
Oh, no, you didn't.